Welcome to our sectional on By Love We Go, making a mission trip at your high school. A little bit about who we are. I'm Sarah Johnson. I'm the missions director at Ileana Christian High School, and I work with Peter.
Who looks very much at ease in that slide there. Peter Boonstrup, principal at Ileana Christian High School. As Letty mentioned, we've been doing this for quite a while now, so we've kind of built things up, but are hoping to pass along some help to you folks. What's next, speaking of you folks?
So Ileana Missions, we take two different seasons of mission trips during our school year at Ileana. We take trips at spring break. We try to focus our spring break trips on national mission trips, so we stay inside the country. We have taken trips to Sauk Village, which is about 5 miles from our school. And then in spring break, we also have gone to Atlanta. We have trips to LA and to West Virginia during spring break. During summer, we try to focus our trips on international travels. So this summer, we returned to the Dominican Republic for the first time since COVID, but we have gone to the Dominican for probably 19, maybe 20 years. And then we will be going to Uganda again this year for our third trip there. We also have trips in the works to Ireland and the Philippines and South Africa for our summer mission trips. We try to run 2 mission trips at each time in order to engage as many students as possible.
Right here, we just wanted to get a sense of you. We have our own little cheering section in the back here of Ileana. But just kind of wondered where you are at. Might make some difference in the things we touch on during this presentation. Do any of you currently organize mission trips? A couple of you do. What?
I actually organize. I've done service learning trips before, but I primarily organize educational overseas trips.
Okay.
So.
Good. How about you?
I lead a trip to the Dominican Republic as well. The school there that we've been learning with English years.
Interesting. And is that like in Santo Domingo area?
Just outside, yeah. About a half hour in time now.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Anybody else? Yeah?
I've led a number of trips for churches in the church world, and so now working at school and seeing the service learning trips, or maybe we'll call them educational / fun trips that happen, the integration of mission trips with the school context, how do you versus the education / fun portion of it, and also how does your mission trips intersect with trips offered by churches in your context? Step on their toes or not.
And I do. Good. Okay, maybe we can talk about a little bit of that. I would say we do not make a big deal out of, you know, this is a mission trip and then this is a service trip. There are certainly some trips that are more mission oriented in terms of talking about Jesus, let's say, as opposed to doing hard labor for people who need help. But most of our trips have elements of all of those things sort of woven into them. But anyway, good. That's good to understand.
So one of the first things we want to address with you today is why we have elected to do mission trips at Ileana.
Yes, we just got out of this, opening ceremony where we spent a whole lot of time talking about why. We are why people, in that sense. Having to have a good reason to go somewhere before we go. Number one, as it says up there, we lead these trips. We see this as part of the Great Commission. Go out into all the world and preach the gospel. This is gospel, hands and feet gospel, not just speaking, but also living and serving in such a way. We also are doing this, frankly, as an antidote to the provincialism, which is very evident in our children. I am assuming you see the same sort of thing happening with your kids. They think that the world revolves around, you know, their neighborhood or their community or their school, or at least, you know, their city or state or something, and that tends to have a pretty skewed version of how most of the people in the world are not like them. And what we're really trying to do is also open their eyes about that. Just a side note there, under number two, references when helping hurt. I don't know if you're familiar, there's a book that was written a number of years ago about this problem of going and helping people, and then by helping them, you actually are doing them harm. And there's maybe lots of different examples of this, right? People are bringing so many, or are sending so many used clothes to Uganda that it has destroyed the clothing industry in Uganda, and in that sense been ultimately tragic and detrimental for the people of Uganda. So one of the things we do here, while we still believe we need to go and help those who are hurting, we spend a lot of time talking with kids about trying to make sure that we are not hurting the people that we are going to serve. And maybe a corollary of that is also making sure that we are not, you know, fulfilling the great white father stereotype, going there and having our kids then think that these people really need to hear from us because we're really smart and they're not. And so instead, it's more a matter of getting them to understand that we're like, one of the ways I like to think of it is we're serving up instead of serving down, right? And then hoping to also learn from these people, because in many ways they know a whole lot more about life than we do. Anyway, our kids are also not getting this at home. I'm sure you're seeing this as well. More and more there is less emphasis on missions, less emphasis on going out into the world, less emphasis on doing the good work of the gospel, and more emphasis on, you know, my kids got to get a great education and make a lot of money and provide for my family, and that's how I, you know, fulfill God's calling on my life. Well, that's not really it, so we need to show them what it is. The retreat effect is also just a little bit of, it certainly works better sometimes when you can get kids out of their traditional environment into a new space. People have been taking retreats for that reason for a long time, helping students discover their direction in life. I think one of the things we certainly do is, again, try to instill this sort of a belief in service as a way of life, and hopefully that will then translate into our students committing themselves to a life of service. Sarah, tell us about a life of service.
Well, one of a combination of points 5 and 6, so our goal is also to inspire the next generation to do great things. This summer, we, Letty, myself, and Peter, and 15 other people went back to the Dominican Republic. Shelly Hernandez, who is a colleague of ours, started a school there 20 years ago. So we got to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Pathway to Jesus School in the Dominican Republic. One of the moments that has stuck with me from that trip is we took two graduated seniors with us, Greg and Ryan, and they got to have a lovely conversation with Shelly that we were party to about Shelly starting this mission when she was fresh out of Dort, right? Like, she went to the Dominican Republic to be a teacher at a local Christian school there, realized that there wasn't ministry or there wasn't Christian education for students who weren't as financially stable as the students that could afford that Christian school. So she talked about starting the Pathway to Jesus School as part of her faithfulness and calling to God. And she had this conversation with two 18, 19-year-old boys, and it was very refreshing to see the gears start to turn. Like, Shelly did this when she was 22. I'm 19. In 3 years, I'm 22. I can do this too. So for me, one of the most important things that we do with these trips is it's not just about the moment. It's not just about introducing them to the now of these trips, it's about helping students discover what can we do to serve God beyond, and how can we inspire the next generation to do what we do. It doesn't have to be in the Dominican, but how can you serve your communities and be a larger part of your communities?
Good.
Okay. The why we, or the how we do it. Peter is definitely the more philosophical of the two of us, and I'm the more logistic, so that is why I get to talk to you about principles and practices. There are four principles that I approach when I'm thinking about where we should go on our mission trips that year, where should we plan to go, and where should we currently go. The most important thing that I care about is finding a place where we can build a relationship with the location and the community there. I am very sensitive to the Great White Father Syndrome. I don't ever want our students to think that we are going to make this place better. I want them to know that we are going to build a community and a relationship with the people that work there. So I try my hardest to find places that we can go over a long period of time. So like I brought up the Dominican, we have gone there longer than I've been at Ileana. They have taken trips before I started there. This will be our third trip to Uganda. We have gone to LA for 4 years now. We happen to serve with Peter's daughter while we're there, so that kind of helps that. This is our fifth or sixth trip to West Virginia, so that's one of the things I care a lot about. The other thing principles that we do is we need to be intentional about reflection. One of the things I think is the most important part of this convention is we get to take time to reflect on why we do things, and I think that's an important part for the kids. You need to ask them before they go why they're going, and then after they went, like, what is the impact of this? I also think it's important to vary the kinds of trips you offer. You had talked about like having educational trips or how to combine those two. We offer three trips, and we're very clear with what these trips are when we offer them to our students. Our first kind of trip is a faith growth trip or a vision trip. That's primarily what we do in Uganda. We may paint a wall while we're in Uganda, but the fact is it is much, much cheaper for them to pay a Ugandan worker to paint the wall than it is for us to show up and do that. So we spend our time while we're in Uganda visiting orphanages that the organization we work with supports. We visit pregnancy centers to kind of understand that, but our focus is, how is God alive in Uganda? Where do you see Jesus in Uganda? We celebrate his creation by spending our fun days on safari, but it's mostly about teaching the kids that God lives bigger than just Northwest Indiana, which is where we're from. The work trip is probably what you think it is. It is where we go and do work. We take a couple of those trips, certainly in the beginning when we were helping to build the school in the Dominican. The Dominican trip was a work trip. We don't have a lot of engagement with the people that we're working with. We are coming alongside a mission and helping them propel into the future. Our first couple trips to West Virginia were like that. We were working with an organization that rescues victims from sex trafficking, so we were helping getting the houses ready for those. The cool thing about, if you focus on number one, is sometimes, like in the case of the Dominican or in West Virginia, your work trips turn into faith growth trips. Because you've helped the mission grow with your work, you can then return and be part of that community, which is one of my favorite things to see. And then a service trip is just kind of a combination of the two. That's certainly more like what we do in LA. When we go to LA, we partner with the Dream Center, which have campuses all over the country, all over the world, actually. So we do some work by working at food pantries, working in churches, but we also learn about how God is at work in Los Angeles. And number four, be fearless. Dare to go and dare to dream where you think you should go. You're always going to have naysayers who are going to tell you this is not a safe space to go. Don't be foolish, but also be fearless and go to these places where you have connections or where you feel called to go. The practicals of how to put together a mission trip. find a place with an established mission. The idea that you are going to go and start a food pantry in a community where you don't live is unwise. So it is best if you find a place with an established mission. We have had tremendous success finding graduates who are doing really cool things in the world and partner with them. We work with a graduate on or a friend of Ileana on all of our trips except for West Virginia, where we partner with Young Life. So find an established mission and partner with them. It is even better and more inspirational for your kids if it is somebody with ties to your community. We believe the application process is also really important. There is a copy of the application that we use in the paperwork that you can get on the website for this. We think it's really important that you ask good questions, ask leading questions. So we have a question on our application about creepy crawlies and bugs, because no matter where you go, you're going to encounter creepies and crawlies and bugs. We stayed in a rat-infested school the first time we were in West Virginia, so having the kids know that that is something that is coming their way is important. Even if you intend on taking everyone who applies, which is absolutely the mindset that we adhere to, have them apply. It is important for them to get started in the process, and the questions you ask will help them develop what they're thinking of. A lesson we learned on one of our trips abroad was work with a travel agency. They know things we don't. They know how to work and navigate things we don't have to. We don't know how to navigate. We have had travel issues almost every time we've gone abroad, and the safety of being able to talk to a travel agent is certainly helpful when you're trying to navigate. My passport didn't come on time, or other kinds of things you can't anticipate.
Well, and maybe a corollary to that, on the other side of things, don't go to a canned trip where they do the whole thing for you, you pay your fee, and go. And of course, the big problem with that is that it's not coming out of any relationship, it's not coming out of any passion that you might have for where you're going and what you're going to be doing there. It gives your students not very much the impression that you know, this is another vacation that you pay for, and then get in exchange an experience out of it. That's I guess I also think that might contribute to this great white father problem that we've been referencing all along. So use a travel agent, but don't let them take care of the whole thing for you.
Another practical that seems tedious in the time but will pay dividends when you are there is make sure you do your prep work. Our spring break is at the beginning of April, so we will start our application process when we get back to school, so around the beginning of November. I do applications for both trips at the same time. You need to give your international students just a little bit longer to make sure that they're getting their passports and shots and all that kind of stuff. We will start with morning meetings for our spring break trips pretty early on in the new year, in January. And we will meet every other week for a while, and then as the trip gets closer, we meet every week. You want to make sure that your students can answer the top two questions. Who are we? Which is bigger than just, you know, my name is Sarah. It's about who we represent. And I think it's really important that we establish in our kids, not only do you represent, like, you and your household, you represent Jesus, you represent the school, but you're also, in a way, a representative of your community that is sending you on these trips. And why are we going? You're going to get kids who apply because they think this is going to be a vacation, and that's great. Take them and teach them it's not a vacation. Like, I'll take anybody on this trip. My goal is to change you before the end of, well, to have the Holy Spirit change you before the end of. And then also make sure, what do you need? Shots, passports. When we travel to Uganda, we need to get shots. I help coordinate that with our students. It's easier because then I know that it's done, and I'm a bit of a control freak. Passports, that's absolutely something we ran into with the DR this year. We had a student when we went to leave who didn't have her passport yet, and she requested it in plenty of time.
understand that she had applied for it, but very delayed. There was a lot of backup because of COVID and so forth. So it wasn't entirely her fault that she had forgotten. But we still ended up getting the girl, to come on the trip. They got an expedited passport, contacted their senator, and a bunch of other stuff.
It was a lot of fun.
And so she arrived a few days late.
It wasn't that much work for us, though, because we just called our travel agent, and we connected the mom with the travel agent, who happens to be a former board member of Ileana and is lovely and helpful. So again, those community relationships are important. In addition to making sure you do the pre-work, make sure you do the post-work, we host reunions for every trip we come back from within 2 weeks, maybe a month of the trips. Especially at spring break, it's really kind of cool because we meet together. So Peter leads the LA trip and I lead the West Virginia trip. We meet as the whole group of everybody who went on the trip. And one of the neat things we were able to discover this year is we were in very different places, right? Like, Peter is in Los Angeles, super urban. I'm in the Appalachian Mountains with my students. Like, we had a mountain as our backyard. We did almost identical work on the same days. Like, we both painted a church. We both worked with a food pantry. So that was a really neat experience to allow those students to share. We did a lot of similar things at the same time. One of my goals in the next couple of years is to start hosting big reunions, which would be every student that has ever gone to West Virginia meets together when that group comes home. Every student we've taken to the Dominican meets together, because I think there's something important in that too, in the building of community. Like, we built the school and we just repainted the mural you painted, right? Like, that kind of notion of God's faithfulness continues in these trips, which I think is cool. One of the things we feel especially strongly about also is challenging the students to write their testimony and to have a testimony. We don't force, I would use that verb, we don't force students to give their testimony, we ask them to, but we do ask every student to make sure that they have one prepared to deliver at any time. And that is an exercise for us in the students that then come to us and say, we don't have a testimony. I don't have a testimony. So we get to have these conversations with students about, yes, you do. Like, you know, I've been a Christian my whole life is one of the most beautiful testimonies you can have. And then encourage and find good chaperones. We happen to have two chaperones who have been on trips with us in this room with us, and two more that are going to go. They just don't know where yet. Or when, but I'm going to make it happen. In this room, your teachers will make your best chaperones. They absolutely know the students even better than the parents do. Sorry for you that are also parents in here. And they just kind of understand how to navigate that line, right? You have to walk that balance of allowing the students to have some freedom and understanding that the students are giving up a portion of their break to do this work, while also not letting chaos ensue. So encourage and find good chaperones, and then work with them to make sure the chaperones gel together, which is a really important thing as well. Fundraising. It certainly should go under the practicals, but it's probably the hardest part of doing these mission trips, so we're gonna do our best to tell you what we have found to work.
And some of it, quite frankly, is a faith step, right? We're going to do this trip, especially if it's your first one. You're thinking, how are we going to, let's see, this is going to cost $20,000. How are we going to raise $20,000? But it happens. We communicate to all of our kids that they have to have some skin in the game. They have to give some of their own money. And not just their time, and we try to encourage them to make sure that it is in fact their money and not mom and dad's money, just as a way of making sure again that we have commitment and buy-in from them, maybe in an almost literal sense. However, that doesn't mean that they pay for the whole trip. I think when we would usually expect kids to kick in maybe 10% of the cost of the trip out of their own pocket. Number two, do a letter campaign. This is by far the most successful, and is where most of the money comes from when we do trips. That is, you as a participant, a student, write a letter explaining what we're going to do. We're going to go on a mission trip. Send it out to aunts and uncles, grandpas and grandmas, friends of the family, co-workers of your parents, stuff like that. And those folks are pretty eager to send in $100 to help a student go on a mission trip.
There is a template letter, or there's a template of the letter that we have our students write attached to the presentation stuff as well.
Number three, encourage students to ask their churches. This is another piece. This doesn't always work. It kind of depends a little bit on the nature of your school. In our school, all of our families are expected to be part of a church, and so it's reasonable for us to say, hey, you have to make a request of that church to support you in this. And also gives, of course, kids a chance then to interact with their church about that. I also just want to acknowledge, you know, some churches, of course, have capacity. Some churches don't. And so there again, we can get very different results. You know, one church, you know, commits to giving you, you know, $20-$50, and another church, you know, wants to pay the whole thing. That's why that for number four, we pool the money. And we didn't do this the very first time, but we quickly learned that was a much better way to go, because you have some kids, quite frankly, who just don't have much capacity to be able to raise a lot of money. All the people that they know are generally poor people, and they're struggling to pay tuition, and they really can't afford to then kick in another $50 or $100 to help a child on this mission trip. And meanwhile, there were other kids, you know, who would write letters to their aunts and uncles, and they would raise like $3,000 without really putting a lot of effort into it. So that's all good. The way we handle that then is, you don't have to raise a certain amount of money, you just have to participate in all of the fundraising activities. You've got to write the letter and send the letter to a lot of people. You have to ask somebody in your church, and you have to participate in the fundraisers. If you do those things and you raise only half the money, then in contrast to the cost, will be good. And over the years, the Lord has blessed that, and we've also been able to have money left over to contribute to support the ministries that we visit. Number five there, donations. This is just another little thing we learned. You know, you don't want them to write checks to the kid. You want them to write their checks to the school, because then they are tax deductible. And then it helps also on the school side if it is not a payment. That is, whatever amount that check is will be good. It will be great. In that sense, it's a donation, and it's not just paying for a student. I did have one other instance over the years where we had a student who was from a Christian family, but none of their relatives or friends were Christians. It was an interesting discussion with that student. That student was embarrassed to ask for money from all of their non-Christian acquaintances and relatives, because that's the bias that their non-Christian friends and relatives had about Christians, is that they were always asking for money. So with this one student, we did work out a special arrangement. His parents wanted to just pay for the whole thing themselves, which we don't normally encourage, but in this case, that was a good idea.
One other thing that we have found is to do small fundraisers frequently. My goal in my position as the missions director is to have small fundraisers once a month or once every other month. And I have just found weird things that you can monetize and done them. So we had a wiffle ball game. We are lucky that our well, it's not luck, it's a lot of skill, and practice. Our baseball team has won the state championship 2 years in a row. So at the beginning of this school year, we had a staff versus state champs wiffle ball game. It was an hour long, and because we were able to monetize ridiculous things, we were able to raise about $4,000 with that wiffle ball game. Most of it comes out of loving generosity from our community. But I've also found that if you keep your missions program in front of the community and they know that this is something you're doing, you'll see the dividends of that payout in the end. Coming up soon, we're going to have a dodgeball tournament. It is crazy, and I don't know why it works as well as it does, but it does. It's one of the highlights of our community. So I would encourage you to just find weird things. I don't know how else to say it, but find weird things that you can monetize. We've also done movie nights. We've done talent shows. We do a dinner in between the matinee and the evening performance of our spring musical. That's right before we go on our trip. So it's one of the ways also that students who aren't able to fundraise enough can contribute to the fundraising. We're working on a fishing expo, like a craft fair, but for fishermen. So there's little things that you can find that will keep your cause in front of the community more often. That is great. And then use your leftover money to donate to the organizations that you've worked with. That's one of our mentalities, is we like to zero out our budget at the end of the year and make sure that we are supporting the missions that we come alongside of and work. So there's just some miscellaneous stuff that we didn't know where it went, and this is miscellaneous Saurus from Yu-Gi-Oh! When I needed an image for miscellaneous, this is what Google gave me. So cheers if you know Yu-Gi-Oh!
That's a very miscellaneous image.
Yeah. Peter didn't like it, but I did it anyway.
Insurance. This is one of the things I guess I just want to mention, because I sometimes talk with people who are just very afraid of doing anything unless they're insured. And so there's two responses to that. Well, then get insurance, or B, forget about the insurance and go anyway. But in either case, you'll note that you still go. So get insurance or don't get insurance, whatever. But the point is to still go. Now, you can get travel insurance, and we purchased travel insurance, and it was very, very wonderful that we had travel insurance actually when COVID hit, because we had just bought like $20,000 worth of flights to Uganda, and we were able to get our money back, actually, which a lot of people weren't. But and also another point about insurance is that you might be able to find out that your trip, because it's a school activity, is covered by the school's general insurance. You may want to check with your finance office or your insurance agent or something to find out if that's the case, or you may not want to check with them and assume that that's the case, and then you know, see how things work out later. But anyway, I just want to make the point, insurance is good, but don't let it hold you back.
Cell phones, kind of the bane of our existence as teachers, but a useful tool for trips. What we've discovered over our last several trips is that cell phones have become our cameras for most of our students, and having pictures for these trips is really important. So we've kind of loosened our grip on not allowing cell phones on the trip. But it is also an important tool for you to communicate with your groups. We use either a Snapchat group or a text group to contact our students, just to remind them of meetings, remind them of things. We kind of let the students decide what they want to do. Do you have Snapchat? Is this a thing I know?
No.
So I have Snapchat to communicate with my students, but I delete them as soon as the trip is over. The other thing we have found with phones is they are, one more note about text chains, do two separate, do a group trip and and a parent, don't mix the two, because teenagers will say things, and it's just better if you have them in two separate groups. It just do it. And then we also limit the time that kids can be on cell phones while we're on trips, or we try to find times for them to put the phones down. When we were in the DR this summer, we didn't let them on their phones during dinner. We just said, put your phones away, eat and talk to each other. And that seemed to work pretty well. Our kids were great about not being around them when we were integrating or working with the students at the school. Just make sure you put it away. But it is a habit for all of us, I think, to pull that phone out and quickly check it. So it's one of those things that you need to be reminding them about at the beginning of the trip. But phones are medium good.
Transportation, just making note of the fact, you know, don't forget about your ground transportation. I'm not necessarily talking about getting there to and from. Everybody thinks of that, of course. But then when you get there, how are we going to get from here to there? For us, when we go to the Dominican Republic, we also take a beach day to just have fun on the beach, which is a 2-hour drive. So we've got to make arrangements for that. There again, if you're working with somebody on the ground locally who's in a ministry, they can take care of that for you, and that's usually the best way to go. Another note with that, of course, is that you're never quite sure what you're going to get, so you need to make inquiries about that. We've gone to the DR, and these kids go in the car, and these kids go in the back of the truck. Which all the kids love to travel in the back of the truck, of course. But some of their parents back home were appalled that their kids were allowed to ride in the back of a pickup truck. Well, sorry, that's the way it's done. So you just need to make sure that you've thought of that, addressed that. And of course, it's also a way for you to help out in a way by employing drivers and people to take you to and from the airport.
The supplies you need while you're on a trip is another thing to be aware of. We certainly have done drives at Ileana before we go, like bringing school supplies to the Dominican or bringing black shoes to Uganda, which the students need to have as part of their school uniforms. And it is a great way for your school community who is sending you out to become part of the service. So even if you can't go, maybe you can donate to this cause, which has been, you know, a good thing for us. What we are starting to discover with our more recent trips, though, is you do need to be mindful of what kind of luggage fees are you paying to get these supplies there versus what you could just purchase while you were there. On our most recent trip to the DR, we spent a significant amount of money moving supplies there that we probably could have just purchased there. So that's something that when we started this, we didn't really think about, but now we're having to be a little bit more mindful of, like making sure that you're aware of what you're paying and for what you're bringing. Do you guys have any questions for us? Comments, concerns, thoughts?
Well, and I want to get back to a comment that you had mentioned earlier just about, church versus school.
Oh, yeah.
And that's really a dilemma, right? As a school administrator, I encountered the same issue when it comes to the teaching of the catechism, right? That's the church's job and not the school's job. I get that. But sometimes, of course, the church is not doing that job. And this is one of the areas, I guess, where for us, it was a matter of we feel strongly that our students need to learn how to serve, need to learn that serving is important, need to develop that mindset and that understanding, a global understanding of what it means to be a Christian. And if they're not getting it at church, well, then we're gonna take care of it. And of course, depending on your community, we have a lot of kids in our school who may, some of them may go to a church that does do this kind of thing, but a lot of them go to churches where there's not enough people or there's not enough passion or something for that in their particular church, So then this becomes a way for them to get that understanding, to get that perspective, and it's not necessarily competing with the church. And in some cases, it may be helpful then to also, hey, if that's a concern, well, then let's involve that church and see if we can work together in sending a group out.
I think our trips we have done them for so long that our churches in our area kind of stay away from spring break trips for their students because they know that we take them, but we certainly affirm any student that goes on a mission trip apart from ours as well. I wouldn't say I communicate a ton, but a little bit with the churches around, especially those that have gone on to work with the same organizations. There are two churches that are pretty passionate about supporting the same organization we support in Uganda. They send a granny's trip, which is a bunch of retired teachers that go on a trip, but they try to go a week or two before we go to set up what we're gonna do. So there's working together in that way. This year when we go to West Virginia, we're going to be joined by another group while we're there, which I've never had happen before, so there's going to be some play with that as well. But I do try to communicate to make sure that we aren't, you know, going to the same place as the church.
Yeah. One question is, how many of your students over the course of 4 years will go on at least one trip?
Ooh, that's a great question. We take... pre-COVID, we were taking pretty large numbers, over 20 on each trip. Since COVID, those numbers have gone down. We have taken between 12 and 15 students on every trip we go on. What I have found in the last, 3 years is that a lot of times if we can get a student to go on one, they will go the rest. There are very few times where we will have a student who will only go once and not go again. And we had several students who took both our spring and summer trips, but I would say we maybe have 40 to 50 of our students that go every year, so that's about 10% of our student body.
I guess I would also respond to that by noting that we do other service things at our school too. So this is just one of them. We also have a Go Day, which Sarah organizes. That's where the whole school, by homeroom, goes out and serves in the community for a day. There's also, it's not a requirement, but you can get excused from one of your exams each semester if you do 10 hours of service. That is not like serving by mowing the lawn at home, but helping out at an organization or something like that. So those are other ways in which everybody gets challenged to participate in service of some sort.
I guess one question I have too, my follow-up is that how many students go more than one trip? I mean, I know that they typically enjoy those opportunities and pursue them, self-select. Have you found much of a need to advertise to other students, to encourage others to participate, or?
I beg, on my hands and knees.
Please come with us.
Please come on this trip.
Okay.
I will do anything to get you on this trip. I am not ashamed to beg. We have one student who just graduated who adores Peter and went on 15 mission trips. Any trip that Peter was going on, he would go. He was furious on the first trip because his mom signed him up without his permission and was mad, and then went with Peter to Atlanta and then followed Peter wherever he went on any trip. So I'm not above bartering, begging. I beg parents. I will do almost anything to get a kid on a trip.
Things were a lot better in that regard before COVID.
Yeah.
COVID really sort of gave us a blow in two ways. In one way, of course, we obviously couldn't go on trips, but I think it also changed the mentality that many of our students just have about going places. They are now more fearful and more reluctant, and their sense of pursuing adventure has been you know, taking a big hit. And so it's tough to get that back, and I think that's also what Sarah is referencing when we're begging kids to go on these trips. We shouldn't have to be begging. I mean, these are wonderful experiences that kids ought to be lining up to go on, but they still have not recovered from COVID yet.
We also do chapels in front of our student body when we get back from trips and talk about how wonderful the trips are. And we have a moment now, like we're going to start going back to Uganda again. We have no students in our building that have ever gone to Uganda. We had no students who had ever gone to the Dominican in our building when we started that trip up again. So we don't have that foundation to kind of build on, oh, you know, Jenna Dutton went on that trip and she was my favorite senior. I'm going to go to be like Jenna. Like, we don't have that. And we have seen exponential growth in our West Virginia trip. The first time we went, we took 6 kids. We've taken as many as 18, and that's grown over 4 years. And I think a large part of that is when we get up on stage and talk to the students, or when the students, when their peers talk to them about what they're doing is great. And student schedules are busier, right? Like, we had a couple members of our baseball team who were ready to go to the Dominican with us, and then they were like, we're gonna win another state championship, you can't make me choose. And I said, of course not, like, go win a state championship. So, but I think we'll get some of them this year. But yeah, it's, you just have to get the kids to want to go.
It is very helpful to get students recommending it to other students. And we try to do that whenever we can. One of the things that helps there, which is kind of a serendipitous thing, I've taken all of my own 4 children on these mission trips over the years, even when they were in 5th and 6th grade, and then they would go back to their 5th and 6th grade friends, so that when they became high schoolers, there were already some kids who wanted to go on this trip because of the things they had heard about it from my daughter or her son a few years earlier. So, you know, those kinds of things also just happen as well, but all of those have been nixed now by COVID, so we're sort of starting over in that regard.
Another thing we do is I ask the students where they want to go. We have an LA trip because I asked a student, where do you want to go? How can I get you on a mission trip? Where do you want to go? And he said, take me to Los Angeles. And I said, done. And then it just so happens that Peter's daughter works at a church in Los Angeles, and another one of our graduates works at the Dream Center, who is the head of short-term missions there. So, done. Did that student go on the trip? No, he did not. But that's okay. Any other questions?
I'm just curious to know. I understand, obviously, in the heart of what you're doing, missions and everything like that. I personally have been on lots of different international missions trips and totally support what's happening. But I'm just curious because what I implement in my school is the educational and academic piece. I'm a history teacher, so I'm all about making history live. And so I'm just curious, is there any sort of integration with the academic piece, cross-curricular elements, and do you really dive into the cultural piece leading up to it, cultural taboos, geography, all of these different things, so that when the kids are actually there, they're at a deeper level of understanding of the culture and the people that they're engaging with?
Short answer, no. Longer answer, yes. We certainly will talk, especially to our groups that go to Uganda. I don't know that we did a ton of that prep work with the DR this year, but that would be part of our prep work. We have the people who organize the mission that we work with in Uganda talk to them about, like, these are things you're going to encounter, these are things you're going to see, this is how you react to them. But in terms of making it an educational experience in the strictest attached to curriculum sense of the word, no. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I think, as Sarah suggested, we have done some of that with the kids who have been going on the trip. It would be nice to do the kind of thing you're talking about with if there were more kids going on the trip, so that you had kids in your classes who were going to be going. That's, and this is not the same thing, but one of the things that we did have this past year with the Dominican Republic, which was helpful in this regard. All of our homerooms in our school sponsor a child at the Pathway to Jesus School. And so all of that means that all of the kids who go on the trip have at least one person at this school that they wanted to connect with. And then when they got back home in this fall, because it was a summer trip, they were able to share with their homerooms their experience of meeting this child and who he or she was. And they also had some other communication to do, and now those homerooms have written a letter back to the kids who are in that class back in the Dominican Republic. So there is a little bit of cultural exchange happening that way.
Anything else?
One last question.
Yeah.
So for your timeline, you plan, so I'm just thinking internationally at this point.
Okay.
So you plan your international trip. In the fall of the school year, you intend on taking the kids the following summer.
Yep. So I have our trips for this spring and summer already selected. The people from Uganda want us to come during spring break instead of summer, so we've had to move some things around. But I start doing that August, September, and touch base with them. So I just confirmed our last trip before I came here. Then our dodgeball tournament is in November, and that's kind of been when we unveil here's where we're going, because it's sort of our big fundraiser for missions. And then we will do applications up until Thanksgiving. Like, we'll send those out through our school uses Google Classroom, so we'll send those out during Google Classroom. And all in the background of that, I'm communicating with the people on the ground, putting together itineraries, what we're going to do, where we're going to stay. I've been ridiculously blessed that the people we work with on the ground handle most of that. Like, when you go to work with the Dream Center, you stay at the Dream Center, they feed you at the Dream Center, they do your itinerary at the Dream Center. If you have the ability to work with the Dream Center, do it. They are a fantastic organization to work with. But yeah, they do most of that. So we'll have our itinerary set, right, by Christmas, our team's set by end of Thanksgiving break, and then we start meeting in January, and then go in April and go in. We want to leave.
Quick turnaround.
Yeah, we want to leave.
I appreciate what you're doing.
Pretty quickly after graduation for the summer trips, because we want to take graduates with us, and we want them to not realize that we don't actually have any sway over them at all anymore. So we want to go while they still,
Do you have any sort of behavioral contract?
I think the application says, don't be dumb, but not really. And you've had more behavioral troubles on your trips than I have, but we don't tend to have a lot. I think you had some smokers once.
Well, and part of it is just because you built up a team with this group,
right,
by meeting with them every week. And the behavior thing is also partly addressed by the fact that we go with teachers, or in my case, the school administrator, so that just makes it a little bit easier. There's an understanding that school standards, I mean, it's not a school environment, of course, but school standards of behavior are still in place. So yes, it has worked out well so far.
I do want to publicly acknowledge that kids are still kids and make bad choices, so that we didn't just condemn ourselves to a whole lot of behavioral problems on our next couple of trips.
Thank you. So my trip, when I take the students, I was going to have a rule I named after a young man who's on that trip.
Oh, yeah.
The Isaac rule, the Brian rule, and so on here too.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, maybe Peter too, do you have any rules you named after students because of what's happened? Now we have rules for you.
Probably just the Peter rule.
There's probably a whole lot of rules that are because of me. I'm a little bit more of the goat and not the sheep, so that's an issue. And there are some things that I can think of. For example, Sarah was just talking about cell phone use, right? Well, I can recall these two girls that got lost in Miami Airport, and we had a flight waiting for us, and they weren't coming. But because they had, we had their cell phone numbers, and they had their cell phones, we were able to finally, they were finally able to answer their phones. We were able to get them, and so it's an illustration of how these cell phones, while they are a bane for many things, they're also extremely, extremely valuable.
We have some documents. I sent them to Brenda, so they're posted somewhere. I've linked you to a Google folder, and in that Google folder, you will find this presentation. These are all live links, but you'll also find the documents for our sample application, our sample trip description, our fundraising letter, and a sample devotions. We didn't talk about devotions at all, but we definitely do devotions, and one of my tasks over the last couple of years is to have teachers that I work with write these devotions. So the devotions that are linked were actually written by Peter, and my hope is to have about 8 of them compiled, 8 sets of devotions, so we can sort of cycle through them for trips, so we have them written for us by us, which is an important thing we feel at Ileana in general. If you have any questions or need anything else, we're on the website.
One of the things I just want to say also about these devotions, because you know, you could just read the devotions and, you know, and pray and move on. But when we are on these trips, we are more intentional than you would be, like, in your classroom, I think, to make sure that that's getting applied, make sure that there's a reflection about that. Another one of the things we do in the evenings is usually go around the circle and, God sightings or highs and lows or whatever, just to increase that kind of reflection on what's going on and what did you see today, and spiritually what's happening during your experience on this trip.
Thank you all for coming.